Blog Talk Radio.
If I were the devil, if I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about, however necessary, to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey. Good day.
Oh, yes. If I were the devil, just keep doing what he's doing. And that's exactly what he's doing, folks. That was Paul Harvey from 1965. We're going back, 53 years ago? Almost 53 years ago that he had that going on. And I'm telling you, it's the same thing today as it was then. It's just getting worse, folks. I want to welcome you to the Pit Radio News. And the Pit, by the way, stands for the Politically Inconvenient Truth, which you get here on the Pit Radio News. Anyhow, we have a co-host. My name is Glenn Atkinson here in Texas, and we have a co-host, a great co-host. His name is Gary Rumor up there in, very cold, North Dakota. Isn't it up there, Gary?
Yes, it's quite cold at this time of the year. But as a rule, usually April is warm, but this time this year, it just happens to be it's more like February right now, but I'm optimistic. It's going to go away, we're going to have nicer weather. You know, God's going to bless us with beautiful weather and beautiful flowers, which I enjoy every spring. And I always get my video camera out and take a video of them. It just brightens up the TV screen so much, having nice, beautiful flowers. And I guess that's God's gift to us. You know, I mean, He gives those beautiful. Gives us those beautiful sceneries and stuff like that, and He gave man a brain so he can invent a camera to take pictures of it so you have it captured forever, you know, and a burner onto a DVD, and it's beautiful to watch, you know. And that's something I enjoy doing since I was 9 years old, raising flowers. So anyway, but I'll turn this back to you, my friend.
Yeah, oh, well, you know, it is that time of year, like you suggested. It's April. You don't know what you're going to get. It's kind of like a box of chocolates. Anyways,
that's right.
But, you know, but down here, you know, it's April, and we're in Texas, and, you know, I haven't been out today because it's kind of similar to yesterday. It's going to be a little warmer, but it was in the low 30s yesterday here with the wind chill, and it's like, man,
wow.
I felt like it was in January, because like, that's what it was like here in January. I'm like, golly, you know, we had, through the whole last week, we had 70s and 80s, upper 80s on Friday, then all of a sudden it dropped down 50 degrees. It went from 89 to 39 and lower than that with the wind chill. So it's like, you know, that's like a shock. So
yeah.
I'm sure the you know, the squirrels and trees and everything's probably just in shock, wondering, well, what's going on here? One day it's hot, next day it's cold. So it's just, you know, you never know. It's like, you know, you got to wear a sweater one day, and next day you're wearing shorts with sandals. And it's like, okay, you know what? I think I'll just hibernate for another few days. But you know, you're right. It's beautiful when the spring comes. It is the nicest, you know, the spring and the fall. You know, the spring is really nice when, you know, the flowers come out and the bloom and everything. That's the nice weather, and you know, you're looking forward to the warmer temperatures. But you know, of course, here in Texas, it gets to be in the hundreds. But you know, it looks really nice with all the different colors and that, you know, coming out in the springtime. And the same with the fall. You know, when you get those leaves, especially up in the north, you really, you know, I know in Canada, that's where I'm from. So you're around the border there, north. Beautiful.
I always said that flowers, and of course, God's also creates beautiful sunsets for us too, and that's for us. He gives it to us. That's for us to enjoy. You know.
Amen. So. Amen. It's true. It's awesome. It's God is so amazing of what He's created, and we're so crazy for what we've destroyed. You know, it's just amazing what we do to destroy what He's made beautiful. You know. You know, we got some events going on here, and I want to start off with something that's I'm from Canada and you're from up close to there. I'm not sure, you know, we were talking a bit in the green room here, but we never mentioned this, and it just kind of, I saw something on the TV just now, and it reminded me, of course, and it's been on my mind for the last couple of days, being from Canada. I'm not sure if you're aware, Gary, so I don't want to put you on the spot, but being as you're way from up that area, from near close to Canada, you might have heard on the news or whatever about the bus that crashed, the young hockey team up there in Saskatchewan, just a little further north than you are. It crashed, and there was 15 kids killed and whatever, like 15 people killed, and you know, they were juniors, they were like in their teens or whatever, and you know, they were taking a bus ride like we do up there, and you know, to go from one town to another or city or whatever, like a, you know, sometimes it's a long journey to go to play a hockey game, just a, you know, a hockey game, just to, you know, have some fun and you know, whatever have you, and of course the hockey community up there is quite large. So to have this happen, and all these you know, the kids were killed, and whatever, there's 29 kids, 15 were killed and 14 injured, and you know, there's a lot of families affected. You know, here in America, there's a lot of people that are Canadian here that actually play for American hockey teams and stuff like this too. So there's a lot of back and forth with this these two countries with this topic of the bus crash. I mean, I saw it. It was just horrific, unbelievable. And of course, our prayers are for the families and the victims, of course, and everything. But you know, I really wanted to basically throw out there with this is, you know, there's a lot of things that happen that kill people. You know, there's cars, you know, car accidents, there's just different kind of, you know, deaths or whatever. But that when they're talking of an object that kills another person, like they say, that's what they say, it's an object that kills the person. But, you know, there's always someone or something behind it, and it's always sinister. So therefore, what I'm trying to say here, folks, is that this bus crash, you know, it killed 15 people. And so therefore, when you link this towards guns, that kill people. Supposedly guns kill people, but it's not people. It's not guns that kill people. It's people behind the gun. It's the same as the bus crash. Whatever happened to make that bus crash, it wasn't the bus itself. Something had to happen in order for that bus to do what it did. No different than a gun to do what it does. It doesn't do it on its own. There has to be some provoking, some kind of a movement to make it work and do it itself. So the point I'm trying to make here, folks, is that these 15 kids were killed. But you don't hear anybody talking about banning buses, do you? You don't hear anybody, you don't hear anybody banning knives that kill people. And there's more knives that kill people than guns when it comes to murder, okay? Or baseball bats, anything like that. Am I wrong for thinking this way, Gary? Go ahead.
No. I mean, you're exactly right. I'm going to tell you something. I believe over in Europe, there was a crazy guy that actually intentionally killed kids. I don't know, 60 people were killed or something with a semi truck. I don't hear anybody trying to ban semi trucks, but you know, when you get somebody evil behind a vehicle which is not designed really to kill, they use it as a weapon. And firearms, not all of them are designed for killing. A lot of people, well, hunting, you kill your prey and you eat your prey when you hunt, and like your AR-15, this is one they're targeting. The AR-15 is not a killing machine. It can be used for, like, say, for instance, self-defense. Say if you have we don't really have problems with people so much, but you have problems with your local wildlife. And say if you have a rabid raccoon or something in a farmer's yard, instead of letting that rabid raccoon become a menace, you know, and biting, and spreading rabies, AR-15 works pretty darn good of dispatching that animal, and that protects everybody around. Or let's say a vicious dog that bites, especially if it bit a child, that you can use a gun to defend that child with AR-15 works really good. Doesn't have a lot of recoil. You know, it beats a 30-06, which will have a lot more recoil, a lot more penetrating power. So. And I hear liberals, you know, they say the guns are evil. I said an object cannot be evil. You aren't going to see a gun go to heaven or a gun go to hell. It's going to remain here on earth. You know, we go to heaven, our bodies remain, but our souls go to heaven. And
that's one point.
That's the only thing that goes. I mean, my guns, when I die, my guns will still be here, and my money will still be here, see? And that's the thing, but my soul will be gone. My body will still be here. And the gun itself, you know, if it was evil, I said, then you'd see guns being locked up in jail. See, it's the people
right
behind it pulls the trigger, you know. And the gun, people design them for, like, sportsmen, you know. Like, I use a lot of mine for shooting targets and stuff like that. And, you know, you can use them for competition where people win a prize. So, you know. The guns aren't designed for killing people. People that build them design them to save lives. You know, if somebody breaks in your house, an AR-15 will probably chase the intruder away. So that's my take on it. So an object cannot be evil or good. It's just an object. So I'll turn this back over to you.
Well, you're exactly right. So what Gary is saying, folks, is basically it's when it gets in the hands of the wrong people, in other words, the gun or whatever, it gets in the hands of the wrong people, or when the bus gets in the hands of the wrong person, or when the knife gets in the hands of the wrong person. That's what we're dealing with, folks. We're not dealing with the object itself. We're dealing with the attitude of the person that's actually controlling that object. So until this leftist liberal Democrat mainstream media debacle—it's crazy. What the narrative they push and have been pushing for decades is all a narrative that, excuse me, pardon me, folks, is all basically to suit the agenda of control for them. And they want power, and they want greed, and they want to have manipulation. That's where it all comes down to. That's what they're trying to do. They make it sound like, you know, and you know, they do a great job at making it sound so good that, you know, this is a good thing to do, is get rid of these guns, oh, my. But then you see the contradiction. An obvious contradiction is when they walk around with their bodyguards, or they walk around with themselves having a gun, or whatever have you. They do all that And yet they want to take the people's guns away, including the people that are of good sound mind that are using these for, like you said, Gary, for like target shooting or defense. You know, the gun is made to defend yourself or whatever have you, and or to hunt for so you can have something to eat and whatnot. Okay, so those are things that it's made for. The most obvious things that years ago it was made for. But you know, it's like the internet. The internet was a tool that was to serve scientists and whatever have you, so they can basically express each other's views back and forth without having to travel as much and whatever. But you know what? The enemy is because we allow him, is involved in everything that's supposed to be good. God is good. God made things that are good. God did not make evil. Things turn evil. And they do that because they allow whomever in their mind to allow the devil, the enemy, to control them, which means then they want control for themselves, from everything. So therefore, these guns that are out there, and whatever, that are sitting there doing nothing, sitting on the table, sitting in their gun rack, or whatever, They're not doing it all on its own. It takes something to provoke it, something to move it, to manipulate it, to control it. So therefore, it's the person itself that's either in control of using it correctly or out of control. And that's exactly what Gary's trying to say, folks. And you know, and that's what we have a problem with the governments that are trying to, basically they're trying to control us by removing all guns. And the thing is that when they say all guns, but they say, oh, but except for ours. We need them. We need them because we need somebody to protect us. Hello, folks. Don't we need guns ourselves to protect us? And that, my friends, is exactly what the Second Amendment was made for. The Second Amendment was made for us to defend ourselves against the government. Against the government. Yeah. Not against just each other, but against the government. That's what gets me. Is they don't even want to see the actual Constitution for what it is, and it's spelled right out there, folks. A 6-year-old, a 7-year-old can read that and get the same understanding as we are, in our 50s and 60s or whatever age you are. It's really not that difficult, is it, Gary?
It is not. And the thing is, these anti-gun folks really aren't anti-gun. They're pro-gun when it comes to the government and, like foreign government, stuff like that. They're pro-gun when it comes to any government. You know, they just want our guns away from us, and it won't stop the next shooting. I pointed out it won't stop the next shooting. If you want to stop it, there's a couple of ways. You can arm people who are, and I don't mind being trained in it, but get trained and arm them so they can protect their kids. And that's probably the best way. But if you really hate guns that much, I said the only other way would be you're going to have locks on all the doors and probably metal detectors, or if not metal detectors, you're going to have somebody stationed by every door with a wand and wand anybody that comes in, in case they have a gun. And, of course, these same people don't want to have their backpacks checked, when they go into the school. Well, anybody can carry a gun in there. They think that if they ban guns that they don't need to have wands anymore, but, knives are still going to be, and they're never going to get rid of guns. I'm sorry, they're not going to get rid of guns as a criminal. The description of a criminal is someone who breaks the law. Well, if they ban guns, we have to turn ours in, but the criminals, by definition, will break the law and hold on to their guns, and then they'll look at it this way. It'll be easy pickings, because now they won't be scared of going into someone's home or anybody else. I mean, I get a little sarcastic with some of these leftists. I said these gun-free zones really work so well at schools, so they want the rest of our homes and stuff gun-free as well. Well, then they're going to be, families slaughtered and stuff like that. And many times the perpetrator gets away with it because they're long gone, and it's not like what you see in a detective show or a TV show. Sometimes they just never get caught. And if they don't do the crime, they get away with it. If they continue doing crimes like that, eventually they'll get caught. But they do it once or twice. If they got mad at somebody for, let's just say, maybe got insulted, and they go out, well, I'm going to get even with them. So the criminal goes out, commits some murder, takes off, and never gets caught. We've had crimes committed here very rarely, but we've had a murder here, and the perpetrator never did get caught, because they're smart enough to get away. It doesn't take much to elude the police and get away with it. So it isn't like a TV show where, well, we've got a find this bullet here. Let's see. Well, it matches that gun, and that doesn't really work either in real life, because I was trained in law enforcement. The best way they do is look at the cases, because if there's a little malfunction, say when you're reaming out the chamber, if it's just a little scratch or something in there, the casing will pick it up when you fire it. When the bullet goes down the bore, that's pretty much impossible, because the bore changes every time, because it puts a little more debris on the bore, or it takes a little of debris off when the bullet passes through, so the bullet will have different markings. You might be able to identify maybe, possibly, the make of the type of gun, but not the individual gun, because it might be 1,000 guns of the same make, and they use the same machine to rifle it, you know, the barrel, you know. And that's, you know, you're never going to identify the gun. That's all this hocus-pocus on TV. I think a lot of people, including congressmen, look at that, and they think, well, that's the way to capture, by registering the gun. Well, the registration, that's why registration doesn't work. See, registration is just a pathway to confiscation. When they say a buyback program, that's confiscation. When they call it gun, they will never say confiscation, because that's just too that's just not politically correct. So they say a buyback program, and they make it sound like it's voluntary, which it's not. It's mandatory. If you look at Australia, and only one-third of the people turned them in, I believe. The rest of people kept them anyway. They said, well, fine, they just made a bunch of the majority of the country criminal, you know, and that's probably what would happen here. If they had a buyback program, nobody's going to turn them in. Very few people, and then what are you going to do with 200 million people? You can't throw 200 million people in jail. That would break the country. The country would be over, you know. So that's why it would fail, no matter what they try. And this is why these anti-gun people aren't going to get a success on this, because I think politicians know that. You know, they already know that this isn't going to work. You know, and of course, somebody with some brains and knowledge, and there's criminals with a lot of brains, they can start manufacturing their own guns or explosives. Hey, what happens if they bring a bomb into the school and just destroy the whole building? Then what's going to happen? It's a homemade bomb. You know, you can't ban water. You can make a bomb out of water. You know, well, that's right. Not going to be banned. You know, so that's the thing. I just, like I said, the only thing I can think of the cure is you're going to have to secure the buildings, you know. Maybe, you know, allow the teachers to get some training, or even any citizen that wants to do it, you know, even if they does it without pay, that would be even better than it, and then you don't have to worry about taking taxpayer money. But to have somebody there that can watch our children and watch the doors, if somebody comes in, they're going to have to be brave. They can't run from them. I mean, this police officer that happened down in Georgia, or not Georgia, but Florida, what happened down there, these police officers not going in and just letting the event take place, that's the wrong move. You have to go in there and you got to face it, you know, and you got to be prepared to kill, you know. That takes some mental conditioning, but that's what you have to do. If you stand outside, then there's no point in even protecting the kids. If you just stand outside and let it happen. So, well, anyway, I'll turn this back over to you, because I got to get a drink of water, my friend.
Okay. Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, and that's the thing is with these, you know, when it comes to defending yourself at home, for example, the best defense you have at home is to get God back in your homes, into the schools, and drain the swamp with governments. Because once you put those two together, the attitudes change. Every attitude changes. So we have it at a home level, school level, and then we have it at a governmental level, and even in our local Congress and or just a local politicians, whatever have you. We got to get it to where people understand that we've broken away from God, and therefore, you know, once you do that, the enemy, the evil, is allowed to run rampant even more. Now, don't get me wrong, we're never going to get rid of total evil until, you know, the world is finished and, you know, Jesus comes and that's it. But I'm saying, but in the time, we have to preserve what he laid out for us, and that's the word of God. So therefore, we have to follow that. So I mean, there's going to have some people that aren't. But the better we are understanding that Bible and understanding that applying that those principles of the Bible, we're going to have a lot better society around us. And when we have the governments that are telling us the complete opposite of what God stands for, then we're in trouble. We've been in trouble. So take for example the border. You know, these people, the drug cartel and the gun violence, people coming in here bringing guns in and doing all this, it's incredible. So, you know, when you have a government like our president, Donald Trump, he is sort of deploying, you know, around 4,000 of our military, you know, our National Guard. Sorry, my apologies. Our National Guard to the border, and that's because he wants to make sure that these criminals do not come in. I mean, it's not about the race or whatever. It's about the attitude of the person coming in and what they're going to do with their attitude, and that is with drugs and with killings and rapings and, you know, with the killings with guns and all the human trafficking and all this stuff like that. You know, that's what he's trying to avoid, is to have that happen, because that's what's been going on for decades and decades. And it's getting better under his administration. At the same time, it's because he's, you know, has a lot more stricter policies. And you get the Congress, they're trying to pull against him or push against him or whatever. But what they're doing is actually a good thing, because they're exposing themselves to why Donald Trump is right. And a lot of people are starting to wake up more and more each day to this fact. And therefore, for him to deploy the National Guard to the border, you know, they're against him for doing that. But you know what? A lot of people aren't thinking about. So did Barack Obama. He did that too. And nobody complained about that. And then so did George W. Bush. He did that too. The last two presidents did the same thing. But you see, if Donald Trump does it, that's when it's no-no. But that's so. Therefore, that tells you, folks, it's not about what Donald Trump's doing. It's just that it's him they're against. So it's not just, you know, I know all along they've been against the gun law, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying, but for the most part, it's a lot of who he is, not just what he's doing. Because you could put anyone else on there that's a Democrat doing those things, and you'd have about 90% acceptance of it, I mean, within the Democratic Party, not of us. So, or whatever, that's them, they're associating what he's doing, are disassociating what he's doing to it's actually him that's doing it. And that's the issue that they have. So a lot of people are catching on to that. I'm seeing people that are talking to me that, you know, I go out every day and I talk to people all the time in my work. And a lot of people were against Donald Trump at first. They thought, you know, I don't know about bringing him in. Oh my God, it's gonna be awful. But now they're starting to see some results, and they're opening to all the other things that they were really, really apprehensive about. And now they're saying, well, you know what? Whoa, you know, this guy's actually doing some good things here. He's doing some good things over here. Hey, wait a minute. You know, he's actually doing that there. So they're starting to think differently. So, you know, these are Democrats and liberals that I'm talking about. These are people that, you know, did not believe in anything. Now they're starting to see over the last year, you know, he's been doing this for over a year now, 15 months or whatever, almost 15 months. And, you know, he's been doing this, and he's been doing a lot of great things considering what the Congress is, how much against them they are. And I'm talking Republican Congress, too, the elitists. So, you know, we need to get God back in the schools, God back in homes, and we need to get God back in our Congress that's going to actually abide by God's law and the Constitution that was made on God's law. So once we get back to those key principles of doing that, drain the swamp. That's what he's doing now. That's what Donald Trump's doing now, is drain the swamp. And actually, it's not just Donald Trump doing it. It's God anointing to do that, because God is fed up with all this. And the reason why God is fed up with it is he always has been, but the people are speaking. They have been for the last 2 or 3 years, actually the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, really, that they've really been starting to. But in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, but the year or so before Donald Trump become president, the people are speaking because they're praying, they're fed up with all this, and they're starting to wake up and see some stuff. And that's what happens, folks, when you go to sleep. You know, when things start going away or start going the way they do, and no one wants to get involved, and it's almost like they're in a sleep pattern. Then all of a sudden, it gets to the point where it's like, you know, oh, they're so mad. Well, you know what? It gradually got this way because we allowed it to gradually get this way. Now it's starting to go back the other way because we're fed up, so we're pushing back against that with God. And that's the reason why we're getting some results, a lot of results. When you consider what Donald Trump has done in you know, almost 15 months, actually started before that, but I'm saying since, you know, he took office on January 20th, 2017, that's when things started really, really taking an amazing turn. But when you consider what he's been up against, this Congress, both sides, and he's still been able to do all this amazing work. Ronald Reagan, would be impressed. You know, considering what Ronald Reagan accomplished, and he was our last greatest president. And Donald Trump has been doing so much like a Ronald Reagan, but he's actually done a lot more in a short period of time, considering what he's went up against when it comes to Congress of pulling back, and all these, you know, George Soros, all these people that are billionaires, multi-billionaires, that are actually funding all these causes that are to go against what the Constitution stands for. You know, you have to really say, you know, God, you are so good, and you're working so good through Donald Trump, because Donald Trump, our president, has been so focused and remained focused on getting what he promised done. It's incredible, folks. I don't know. I know some people that are in their 80s right now that I talk to through work, 80s and 90 years old, 90 years old or more, and they're saying this is incredible. And that's going back, you know, when they were voting, you know, 70, 80 years ago, about 70-something years ago, some of these people. And they're saying this is incredible what Donald Trump's doing. That tells me that I was on the right track before he even became president. For the last many, many years, I've liked Donald Trump and what he stood for. I had a feeling that this guy would actually be one that could help turn this country around. And you know what? They are ones that are saying, you know, we wished he was doing this back in, you know, in the 90s, you know, but it just, you know, it wasn't his turn, I guess. So, what are your thoughts on Donald Trump's progress, Gary?
Well, I think he's doing pretty good. I did disagree with him on the bump stock ban. He said he would sign that. Like I said, I would say leave the gun industry alone and leave people alone, because you can manufacture, a person with a little technical skill can manufacture a bump stock in about 30 minutes. So that's not going to do any good. And I disagreed with him on that. But like I said, you got to tell him. I always said you got to tell him that and never be threatening. And he'll listen to us. You know, the other president, Obama, I don't think he would listen to us, you know. He'd probably call us a liar or didn't tell the truth, because, you know, Obama said he wasn't going to ban all guns. He wasn't successful, but I guarantee he wanted to do it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He had a lot of backlash. I mean, gun control or anything like that is really unpopular. And when they were talking about, like, the National Guard protecting the border, I know there was a few people that thought, well, they're violating the Posse Comitatus Act. And they're really not, because the Posse Comitatus Act is the military cannot be used against its own citizens. We're talking about foreigners who are not citizens. So the military can protect our country, protect our borders against somebody breaking in. And like I said, somebody could be carrying a bomb in, or a lot of them have smuggled in guns. I mean, look at the drugs coming in. So we know there's guns coming in, too. So that somebody could carry a bomb in and, you know, plant it someplace in a supermarket or in a mall, and it could kill a lot of people. I mean, they'll make mass killings from guns look real tiny. You know, I mean, look at, 9/11 was a couple of jets, you know. I mean, going into the towers where 3,000 people, around 3,000 people were killed. So, like I said, one of these times, or they'll release a bacteria agent that can kill a million people, you know. And this is why we need secure borders. This is especially, I mean, you can wipe out a country with a bacteria agent. I mean, it can make all of us very sick or kill us, you know. So we need protection, you know, and that's what the military's job is. That's what Donald Trump's job is to protect the borders. And he protects the citizens by honoring the oath of office and allowing us to protect ourselves and purchase the tools to do it, the firearms or whatever, you know. And like I said, when you ban certain guns, like semi-autos, and the criminal has them, you just put the citizenry at a disadvantage, because now, I mean, you kick your hunting rifle, you have to operate a bolt, and somebody has a semi-automatic, guess who's got the advantage? The guy with a semi-automatic. Bolt actions are good for what they're designed for, but they're not designed for really home defense. That's what a semi-auto is for home defense and quick response of handguns or rifles. And I have some training on it, so I do have a little bit of knowledge on this. I'm not an expert. I'm not claiming to be an expert. But I have some law enforcement training, and I know what works and what doesn't work. And that's pure logic. When somebody has a logic brain, they know that works. You know, why put the citizen at a disadvantage? Give them the advantage. Make it harder on the criminal. You know, like I said, the Democrat Party and the judges, the Democrat judges who voted Democrat, they were soft on crime, and they did not punish the criminal long enough. They commit a crime, revolving doors of justice. They got released, commit another crime. They got released, commit another crime, and went on and on and on like that. And of course, this is why we have what we have now out there, with a bunch of people out there that have no belief in God, and some people actually think that killing is okay, murder is okay. Well, that's what happens when you move away from God, because then Satan takes over, and Satan will say killing is fine. Kill a Christian. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what Satan's telling us, telling people. Well, that's what happens. So I always said be tough on crime. I'm not saying be torturous to the criminals. I said, but they don't need to have movie rentals every weekend, you know, and $60 a plate meals, you know, better than what we eat. They should be locked up, given, and that's the best gun control there is when you put a criminal in jail. They have no guns in jail. So, I mean, there you go. I mean, there you got gun control, and you're not disarming us. So what do you think of that, my friend?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, that's the thing is, you know, you made a good point there. He's the best gun control. Yeah, you put him people in jail. You know, definitely. But that's the thing is, we get some of this government letting people out. You know, just like, you know, they to go to the court or whatever. This even if they do, and they just let them out. Even the illegals. You know, they say, okay, well, you know what? They're deal, and they drop them here. You just go out now. You can leave. Even though the murderers, rapists, whatever. You know, they were in immigration or whatever, detention centers, whatever. And here you go. These are people that have killed with guns, knives, do whatever they do, whatever, and rape and whatever. And they just like, oh, here you go. Basically, almost like a catch and release. A lot of them are doing that too. So it's like, okay, how are we safe when we have all these people out there with these guns that are illegal, and these people that are illegal themselves? You put two illegals, that don't make it right. It makes it even worse. And this is the thing is you know, and then they have the audacity to say Trump is wrong for having the National Guard protect the border. Like you said, Gary, it's not them coming after us. It's them protecting us from people coming in that aren't allowed to come into this country. And if they are allowed to come in the country, they'll come in to the nice, beautiful door with a doorknob on it saying, you know, welcome. You're, you know, because you've been screened. You've been, you know, everything's fine. You've got your background check. Everything's done. Okay, but when they're jumping over walls, or even there's no walls, they're just coming across whatever, they're digging tunnels and through the little lakes or whatever, whatever they're doing, they're coming across illegally, and yet they're saying that, oh, don't put the National Guard there? What? So therefore, I still make the same analogy. So you're saying there should not be any wall, so therefore we put a wall of people until the wall gets built. And you're saying that's not good. That's not good either. So therefore, guess what? I'm going to go over to everybody's homes that feels that way. I'm going to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to bring my screwdrivers over, and they say, what are you doing? I'm taking your door off. You don't need a door. You don't need protection. You don't need to have that door on there. What are you doing? They'll say, oh, but I don't want nobody coming in here. Well, do you think that we don't want that same thing for everyone in this whole country? The biggest thing, the most important thing that the president has for his agenda, for his, the thing that he has to do, what's most important, that is secure this country. It's the safety and security of this country. And as a man or a woman of your children, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to protect them. Well, that's why you have doors. That's why you have windows. That's why you have whatever. So therefore, it's not a welcoming saying everybody can come on in. It's saying, you know what? No. Knock on the door, and if we want you in, we'll be the ones to decide that, not you. So what's the difference between the border or your door? So let me continue taking your door hinges off because you don't need your door, right? How do you feel about that, Gary?
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. I had to flip the mute. But anyway, yeah, you know, this wall, and it's like I said, it's actually going to be cheap insurance. You know, and that should be very thick.
Yeah.
So if somebody tries to run a vehicle through it, like a semi or something, it won't go through. I mean, I'm talking it's going to have to be high and thick. And
yeah, it is.
I wouldn't even mind having this might sound really cruel, but I wouldn't even mind if they put razor wire over the top. I mean, like they do in prisons, you know, and
not
have
cruel.
A door like
that's...
you do. Have a means to come in where people want to become citizens, and if they get green cards, whatever. I mean, you know, to visit. I mean, I'm not against that. But like I said, look what Mexico does if somebody sneaks into Mexico. I mean, they'll either throw you, they'll even export you pretty quick. They deport you out to wherever country you come from, they'll send you right back, or they send you to a few years of harsh time in prison. And, of course,
yep.
They're not called racists. We're called racists. When we just want to protect our country, we're called a racist. You know, it just seems like, you know, 9/11 happened. And it just seems like it wasn't that long ago. It didn't seem that long ago to me. And yet it's just like they forget about it, you know. I think what they had a show on TV, those buildings coming down, those two big towers coming down, and planes flying into them, and just show what can happen again. I mean, still got some tall buildings, you know. I mean, they got the Sears Tower. I mean, that could be attacked, you know. You don't know, you know. The terrorists aren't dumb. They're evil, but they're not dumb either. They know how to bring a building down, and they know how to probably kill masses of people. And for them, some of them probably just would do it for fun, you know, because they have no really moral right or wrong. They have no moral compass, you know. They might say Allah, but Allah really is Satan, you know. I mean, that's their Allah. I mean, it's not God. Because God wouldn't stand for that, you know. It's God that only has the right to do, you know. God is the only entity that has the right to destroy. If he wants to destroy something, he can. But he'd do it for good, you know what I mean? If there's a reason. If you read the Bible, he destroyed a lot of stuff, and he rebuilt it again, you know. But he did it because there was so much evil, you know. And we're kind of heading that way right now because there's so much evil, and it's being portrayed as good, and good is being portrayed as evil. You know, I mean, if you're a Christian, you get bashed, you get murdered, get tortured. You know, if you're just a Christian and have never hurt anyone. You know, if you happen to exercise the Second Amendment, look at the NRA, how they get bashed. Dana Loesch, or I don't know how to pronounce her name, but look how she got bashed just because. She was a member.
Yep.
That she was. She was involved with protecting our gun rights, you know. And you go to these, some of these protests. If you ever look at them on YouTube, these people who are vile. I mean, they're vile. They use foul language freely. And if you say there's a God, they'll tell you there's no God, and they'll, you know, they say God is made up by man. It's kind of like Paul Harvey's. Statement there is words there. They say God is man-made. Well, God created all of us. You know, you can say probably religion is man-made. That's fine because that's just the way you want to honor God and worship God. But God is the creator. That's the way I look at it. As God is not a religion. He's a creator. You know, I don't know if you can say he or she or probably both. You know, I can't say that. I don't know, but he's perfect, just like Jesus was perfect. You know, he was created and he was perfect. And but he was still, I mean, Jesus still probably went out and had fun and enjoyed life, but he never sinned, see. Because he was still, you know, and Jesus also, people got sick, he got sick. He got the flu and everything else like everybody got, you know. He was human, but he was a perfect human, you know. And he would, you know, He loved everybody, and he gave everybody a chance to be on his side. He didn't even hate the enemies, you know. He wanted them to be good, you know. God doesn't want people to be evil, but he wants them to be good on their own. He kind of guides the way, you know. Like if you're weak and you sin a lot, God will guide the way. He won't make it easy for you. He wants you to do it yourself because that's the only way to make a strong person, you know. Because we had a person on a show a few weeks ago, and she was never followed God. She had, her life was chaos, and then when she followed God, and I love happy endings, by the way, her life became blessed, and she was very happy. The only way of happiness is to follow God. You know, if you don't follow God, you can probably have a fake type of happiness, but you're not really happy. You're miserable.
Right.
And that's what Satan does. That's what socialists do. Satan does the same thing. Satan's basically kind of like a socialist. He loves misery. He loves it. God hates misery. He just wants to make your life better. But he wants you to do it yourself. You know, he'll guide you, but he wants you to do it yourself. It's, you know, and I think that's that's what's the right thing to do. That's the right thing to do it. Because if he did it for you, it's kind of like somebody gave you money and helped you through life and didn't have you do any work and just gave you money. it isn't the same way as having you work for it. And that's what God did. He had you work for it. You know, he wanted you work for your happiness and stuff. And that's kind of what our founding fathers, that's what they were following in the Bible. You know, they said you have the right, the inalienable right to life, liberty, which is freedom, and the pursuit of happiness. Not to give happiness given to you by government, but happiness by your own hard work, and God always will bless you with happiness when you work hard for it. And when you go to heaven, there you have real paradise, because God, since he's a creator, he can create paradise for you too. And he promises, and he will keep his promise. God will not let you down. I mean, politicians will promise you that too, but how many promises of paradise as politicians can keep? I think that zero is their average. But God is one person that will keep that promise. Then you'll have eternal happiness. You'll never be no more sickness in heaven. You won't have the flu anymore. You don't have to worry about getting waking up. Oh, I feel awful today. You'll be happy. You'll be feeling great. In fact, I don't think you'll even need sleep, because your body will be literally perfect. So you won't even need sleep either. So there'll be no darkness, you know. And I want to go to heaven. I'm not perfect, far from it, you know. But I in a way, I'm curious. I'm not even scared, but I'm more curious to see what it would like. I think all of us would be curious, you know, when we experience. Sure. But paradise would be, you know, everybody would love everybody. You won't have to worry about war up there. No hate. I mean, it'd be what the liberals say down here: peace, be eternal peace all over the world, which I agree with. But it's incapable of happening here, because there's some people out there who do not want peace. You know, so. But anyway, I'll turn this back over to you.
Well, you know, you're right, and God is the author of peace, you know, and the devil is the author of confusion. So, and peace, a lot of people misunderstand peace, too. They think, you know, if he's the author of peace, then it should be peace around us. Well, guess what? He gives us also our free will. There's God's will and there's free will. You can choose to have whatever you want to have. That's the great God we have. He gives us, you know, that actual option. We can choose it. But guess what? There comes a reward, or there comes you know, consequences. So, but when it comes to peace, peace is between the ears. It's in the mind, peace of mind. Peace out there is not going to happen until we all have individually peace between our ears. And therefore, the only way that's really going to happen totally is when we're in heaven. And that's why we don't have to eat or drink or sleep or whatever, because we're going to have everything, and we're going to be perfect, you know, in our spiritual bodies, where we'll get our bodies back, you know, in a spiritual sense. So therefore, that's the peace we'll have. But, you know, in order to get there and to have some peace around us or whatever, we got to have God in our homes, our schools, and in our governments. It all has to stem from reading and understanding and applying that beautiful book called the Bible, with 66 books in it. So therefore, that's the whole understanding. Revelation in there, the last book of the Bible, shows us that. And, you know, but back to what you were saying about the let's put it this way. You and I both have a background in law enforcement. You know, we have, I have criminology. I have, I don't even know if you know this, but I have criminology, psychology, sociology, corrections, all this law and security, and whatever. And I've had experience in that too, just like you do. And so therefore we come from a different background than a lot of people in America, but guess what? Or Canada, that I'm from originally. But the bottom line is you don't necessarily have to just have a background in law enforcement like we do in order to understand what's around us and what needs to be done and why it's happening right now. But it does help when, you know, you and I see from a perspective that it does help a little bit more for a different perspective. That I'm going to put it this way: when we come to let's look at it this way, folks. Jails and the border wall. Okay, let's look at both there. One is to keep the criminals that we already have in. So therefore, we on the outside are protected. So therefore, we have walls within walls, or the bars and whatever have you inside, and we have people inside there that are making sure that if one is If one gets by one of those, then you have a man in its place to make sure that they do not get out into society. And on occasion, sometimes they do get out, some of the odd people. But guess what? If we didn't have those bars there, we didn't have those walls there, and we didn't have those people there, the correctional officers, if you will, then these people would be free to do what they want to do that they've just been doing, that got them caught in the first place. So you look at that perspective, and guess what? Everyone that I know, liberal and Democrat or conservative or Republican, every one of them know that they like it that we have jails, that we keep those people in there. I've not heard one person say, oh, he murdered, let him out. No, I've never heard anybody like that. If I did, then I know that they really need God badly, really bad. But I've never heard anybody say, oh, yeah, he's a murderer, but, you know, just let him out. He's fine. I never heard that. I don't know if anybody I've ever heard of have ever said something like that or thought that way. So in that mentality, I think, good. I'm glad they think that way because, they want to have a barrier between them and the criminal. Someone that's illegal, someone that did something wrong, they need to pay the penalty or stay away from society, so therefore we don't have that to worry about, be concerned about. So therefore, now we'll go to the wall. The wall is to keep people out that are like that. What's the difference, folks? What's the difference of the wall? There's this wall in the prison. There's a wall of people, the National Guard. There's people that are protecting us inside. So the people from the outside don't get in. And the jails is
exactly.
From protecting from the people that are inside. There is no difference other than one is outside and one is inside, but there's a wall. There's a barrier between that is people and an object, meaning the wall or the actual bars. Do you see the pattern here? It's exactly the same thing, Gary, with these people are saying the same thing. But they don't want to attach it to the border. And I'm going, oh my God, how can you not see the mentality that you're contradicting yourself? If you think it's fair and it's fine and it's great and it's law to keep those criminals inside, to pay the price of what they did that was wrong to you and your fellow Americans or Canadians or anybody, any country, then what's the difference of trying to make sure that those people that we're not sure of to come into this country are not going to offend us or hurt us or kill us also? What is the difference, Gary?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. There really is no difference. But with this wall, yeah, it keeps the bad people out until we can vet them. Yeah. And if some people get in, there's going to be people getting in. Well, then we have a Second Amendment to protect us if they get in.
Exactly.
Because there's no such thing. It's perfect. That's one of the reasons for the Second Amendment. I sound like a broken record because I mentioned the Second Amendment, but that's so crucial. It's just as crucial as the First Amendment. And the First Amendment is how, I'll give you an example of the First Amendment. It basically protects political speech. Now, it doesn't protect somebody going out threatening to kill a public figure or threatening to kill people, but it does protect
right.
this. Let's just say we're talking about these school shootings. Well, maybe I come up with an idea here. Well, I have a right to come up with an idea. Maybe there's something other than gun control. It might work a heck of a lot better. So maybe I come up with an idea. I'm allowed to say it. If it doesn't work, well, that's fine. I can still come up with ideas. See, we should all be allowed to come up with ideas that would probably work so much better than taking away our natural right. That's actually a right from God, not from government. It's a right from God. If you read in the Bible, we do have a right to defend ourselves, not murder, but defend ourselves, And killing not necessarily is wrong if it's in self-defense. You have a right to – the criminal does not have a right to desecrate your body or your children's body or your spouse's body. And in that situation, you have a right to stop them. You're not torturing them. The gun doesn't torture. You use a gun to stop them. And if you have to use it, you have to. If he takes off and runs, well, then you don't have to use it. Then your right to self-defense ends right there. This is why we keep stressing that. And this is why the First Amendment is so important, so we can sit there, okay, this idea might really work at the schools, maybe securing the buildings and come up with some plan or something like that. There's nothing wrong, nothing at all wrong with saying stuff like that, but they even seek to silence that now.
Right.
We're not stupid. We're very smart. We're probably a lot smarter than a lot of these legislators. After all, Glenn, you know, it's our country. It's not the government's. It's our country. It's your country. It's my country. We own this country. And if something's wrong and we see something wrong, we have every right to speak out, say, okay, this is what we have to do to rectify the problem. So I'll turn this back over to you. I don't think we have a heck of a lot of time left, so I'll turn this back over to you and let you wrap this up, my friend.
Okay, and you know, you're exactly right. You know, the government is in place, you know, and it's we're all supposed to serve God. You know, the Constitution is there to uphold whatever, you know, it's not a living, breathing document. It's there. It's not changing. God is not changing. That's what we have, and it took some bright people that understood the Bible and what God expected of us to actually write all that. Declaration of Independence and everything with it, everything. It's just people have to understand that Constitution is something that, you know, if there's anything to change in any amendment, whatever, then we have a process for that. We don't change it on our own. We just can't walk up and say, today I don't believe in this, so I'm just going to actually do something that I like. Don't worry about the Constitution. It don't matter. Matter of fact, they don't even think about the Constitution. They don't even think of that way. These people out there, they just feel that they're going to do something different, even if they don't even know the Constitution. That's why they're doing things wrong. They do not understand it. And even if they do understand it, they try to manipulate it. And you can't manipulate God. You can't manipulate the Constitution. It is what it is, and it always will be that way. It was there yesterday, it was today, and it's going to be tomorrow, the same thing. So therefore, they better get on the right side of God and the right side of the law, or else they're going to be inside the jail, or they're not going to be able to come in this country if they're illegal, and they're not going to be able to have the freedoms that actually God would love us to have, as long as we're doing the right thing. We can't, you know, we can't abuse it. So, having said that, yes, we are nearing the end of the show here, so... Another thing that Americans and Canadians and people in this world are getting lazy, and they just feel entitled. They feel they have entitlement where they can just have everything handed to them, given to them, and not work for it and whatever. Well, Paul Harvey also did a nice segment that I'm going to play for you that I do every week also. It's called Hard Work, and guess what? There's nothing wrong with hard work. And and that's what everybody needs to get off their keisters and start doing something about it. And because there was 10.5 years where I couldn't work this country the way I would like to have when I came here, but I wasn't lazy. I went out there and worked anyway, but not making money. So there's ways of helping this country and not hurting it. And that's what I choose, and that's what I hope you choose too, folks. Anyways, let's wrap this up for the week, and we'll see you next week. And we thank you very much, and God bless America. And you and your family, Gary, and everybody else in it. And let's put on some hard work for Paul Harvey.
God bless you, too, and your family, too, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
American preachers tell me that there is no sermon which is looked forward to with less enthusiasm than a sermon about sin. Well, that's probably true if we're talking about a secular sermon on the subject of hard work. There is no gospel less popular than the gospel of hard work. I could ask you today, I could ask you right now to demonstrate your faith in America by handing poison to snakes, and many or most of you would. I could outline a fundamental Christian code of conduct which strictly forbids the use of stimulants or sedatives or the wearing of jewelry, and many would, willingly and without question, accept and be bound by such abstinence. Our leaders could readily rally you to fight and die for your country, as they have many times, and you would even again. But if Paul Harvey or any politician should state that our only chance for survival is to get off our dead centers and get to work, well, I'd be lucky if you'd let me finish. But I'm going to test my luck today. You see, I don't happen to be running for or from anything, and that does make a difference. The pregnant skyline of America was set in place one brick at a time. Now that represents a lot of calluses. America the Beautiful is not an accomplished fact guaranteed to remain intact. God shed his grace on thee, to be sure, but this was wasteland when God had it to himself. He handed man a hoe and said, "You want another Eden? All right, earn it." And all that's necessary for the weeds to take over again is for you and me to lay down that hoe. Now, Americans, the problem is less acute today than it has been. We're on the right track right now.
But if we sit down on that track, I'm afraid we're going to get run over. We tell our young people how our country was carved out of the wilderness. No, it wasn't. Our nation was not carved out of the wilderness. Our nation was hammered and hoed and chopped and dug and sawed and clawed out of the wilderness by barehanded men who asked nothing for nothing. America did not start out with an agricultural production that's the awe and envy of the world. It was seeded first by sod-busting farmers who fought Indians and ranchers and cold and heat and drought and bugs and flood and one another. The fruited plain sprang forth from barren acres only after they had been watered with a lot of sweat. I guess what I'm saying is that the more history I study, ours and others, the more certain I am that there is one fertilizer essential to the survival of civilization, and that fertilizer is sweat. And I don't mean perspiration. I mean the kind of steamy, streamy, salty sweat that's wrung from a man by hard physical work. Somehow, the sweat gets into the soil of a farm or a factory or a city or a state or a nation, and everything thereabouts grows tall and strong and tough enough to stand against any storm. But the day the sweat dries up, the soil dries up, and whole civilizations are buried in dust.